Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast, brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I am your host, Paul David, CEO and founder of Literal Humans. And today we've got a fantastic episode. We are joined by McCall Jean-Lise White, the founder and CEO of Wealthmore. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on. Especially on an auspicious day like today, our Eagles, we're both Philly people. Our Eagles are in the Super Bowl.
Let's go, Eagles. Go Birds!
Go Birds. We both got our green on for folks who are watching the video. And yeah, today we're going to talk about financial advice for all and the great work that's happening at Wealthmore. Just to give folks some context, Wealthmore is a fintech platform that provides users with wealth advice and community support in order to close the wealth gap and create generational wealth. It's a very, very noble mission that we support. By way of background, after working in financial services for over two decades, including senior management and director roles at small companies like Amex and JP Morgan, McCall understood how important financial advice was to the lives of people. She also knew that it was only accessible to the wealthy, unfortunately, and many folks are barred from investment and financial planning services that are needed to grow and retain wealth. So Wealthmore hopes to change this by connecting its users to real life and automated financial planning services. Their mission is driven by McCall's hope to make financial growth achievable for all. The subject of Wealthmore's podcast is called All the Wealth, where McCall speaks to experts about wealth generation and much more. So first question, we'd love to hear just, you know, from these discussions that you've had, what have you learned? Very curious to hear.
You know, All the Wealth started from a member of our team who would hear our lively conversations about what we were hearing when we would go to different events and talk to people in the community. And they were like, you guys, you know, you should record this, right? And so we were like, yeah, well, why not? And certainly we weren't trying to be podcasters, but we realized that there was this unique opportunity to sort of talk to people, share what we were hearing. And probably the number one eye-opening was that what we thought was sort of like the base level of financial literacy, particularly here in the U.S., is actually lower than what we thought. That was pretty eye-opening. So the sort of questions that we thought were sort of like table stakes that maybe, you know, after working for a few years, people got this through their workplace or, you know, somewhere in college, maybe they got some sort of financial literacy, some help with things, we were finding it just hasn't happened. And probably one of the biggest ones is people underutilizing their 401ks, not even taking the match was a pretty eye-opening one. When we talked to folks around home buying, people not fully understanding the ins and outs of that. And then, frankly, just why they should invest, like not understanding the basics of compounding interest and having a wealth advisor. And so those were all things that sort of compelled us to have the podcast. And then to even talk to different discrete groups so we could get the message and the information out group by group.
Yeah, it's why we jumped right into podcasting, but yeah, it's one of the joys of, you know, running a podcast is you talk to so many interesting people and you just learn so much. And then, you know, what we try to do, and we've seen this with some of our founders that we work with, is you can dump that information, those learnings into your product. And it sounds like you've done that. It sounds like you've immediately applied those to the work that you do with folks. That's really great to hear. Just taking a step back, would love to, you know, get some of the story and the background. You know, how long had you been thinking about launching Wealthmore before you took the plunge in 2021? And, you know, how did your former colleagues react?
Yeah, I've always been at the forefront of innovation, be it at American Express or JP Morgan. Those roles always sort of, you know, caught my interest. I feel like internally I was kind of known as the firefighter, like willing to take on like the big, like ugly projects that everyone else was sort of running away from. So I don't think it was completely like surprising to my colleagues that I would go and do something like this. And particularly in these large organizations, they're always keeping track of fintechs. So when you're in a role like I was in, you were also seeing the fintechs come through and attempt to make partnerships. And you would see sort of like the pros and cons of those business models and even like how deeply the team even understood the economics of monetizing the product. So being in that seat, I certainly felt like I had both sort of worlds, like what was happening in fintech, but also the expertise of working for one of the biggest bank in the world.
What would you say has been your biggest, you know, learning since taking it on in 2021? Just curious, like what, you know, surprised or shocked you the most?
Well, as hard as you think it will be to run a startup and you sort of like do your due diligence before you jump in, it's still like X harder, right?
Amen. Amen.
And I'm very candid about that because coming from the side of the Amexes and the JPMs of the world, you have large tech teams to deploy a product. You have large teams to do customer research and UAT testing of your product. And I certainly had the benefit of champagne marketing budgets. And then you sort of come over to building a company and a product, and you're working with a fraction of that, and you're wearing all the hats. And I like to say I work with like a sparkling budget, sparkling water budget for marketing, right? So it's just completely different when you're wearing so many hats. But the beauty is you're driving innovation at a speed like no other. So when I think about the innovation that I was driving in these larger organizations, the time it took to build consensus, the time that it took to get financial approval to launch something, then the time it took to get through tech prioritization, because generally, like your new idea had to sort of be valuable enough to remove something else that was planned for the next like 24 months. And all those things go away. So your ability to take consumer insights, validate them, and then execute them into like real features, benefits is lightning speed. And that I just absolutely love. That is certainly the favorite part of my day.
Yeah, it's one of those things, I can really relate to that. That's one of those things you can move quickly, but you're doing the moving, you know,
yes.
And like that's a heavy.
Yeah.
I think one of my joys that, you know, after we'll be 5 years old this year, literal humans, but slowly handing those different hats to different people in the organization,
yes,
that you hire, like here's finance, here's HR, here's operations, here's research, you know.
Yes.
That's kind of one of the joys of building a startup. So I really hear you on that.
Yeah. Paul, I hear like, you know, certain founders struggle to let certain things go. I don't have that issue.
Same.
I am like,
in fact, I think I maybe delegate too quickly. I'm just like, yeah, take that, you know? And so I think that's one thing you need to learn too as a founder is like how to, I think I've, you know, sort of struggled with this, but like how to, you know, give people appropriate amount of context and background and really, you know, delegate effectively rather than just throwing things over your shoulder.
Yeah.
That's been, I think, one of my leadership challenges is I think I can operate with like very little context and a lot of ambiguity, and coming to realize a lot of other folks can't, you know, they just, you know, they prefer not to, and that's okay too.
Or just frankly, I would say sort of like our hiring journey, we've had way more success with folks that have worked at startups before.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Far more.
Yeah, we've struggled when we've tried to hire people from big corporations, big agencies, because they just, the point of reference is, like you said, they're used to having teams who help them. So
yeah,
appreciate that. Yeah. Want to get more into, you know, the products and your offerings at Wealthmore. We know you're about to launch your free community membership program, which is very exciting. We'd love you to explain to our listeners, you know, what users will gain access to once they join this program. And kind of what's the difference between like a standard membership and a community membership?
Yeah. Yeah. Community came out of learnings from the beta. So when we launched the beta, I think, you know, with any founder, you have sort of like, here are the big bets. Like, we believe these will be the things that will resonate the most once the product is in the wild. And probably for us, we knew community would be important, but we didn't know just how important it would be. And probably one of the biggest things to come out of the beta was make community as equally important as the advice. And that was sort of literally impacted our positioning, our branding. We elevated all of those things to lean in heavily to the community piece. But another big insight was that people were like, hey, I may not be ready to invest, but I want to be part of a group of people who are on that wealth building journey. And hence, we figured out we could make community free And we could also make our wealth planning tool accessible. So when you join community, you're getting access to all of the content that is developed, curated by our wealth advisors who are all certified financial planners. So you are seeing all those posts. You have access to the webinars, certain events. You're also getting access to all the communities and the things that we curate at the community level. And we currently have 19 different communities. So I'm pretty confident you will find your own adventure and find your people within those different communities. And then once folks are ready to invest, they can move into either our Invest Plus plan or Premium Advice Plus, where they're working directly with one of our wealth advisors, and they can invest in any of our four different managed portfolios.
And what would you say are some of the most interesting insights that have come out of those communities about how different communities relate to saving, investing, building wealth? I'm just curious there.
Yeah, I definitely find that so many of our folks, like the most popular, one of the most popular communities is first gen wealth, which we expected that, but we're still, again, like until you actually go into the beta and start bringing folks on, you're not quite sure. New investors turned out to be another one of our bigger communities. And then equally represented are men and women in our across, like, then we have members from 22 different states, and we find equal representation between men and women. And most of our users are somewhere between 25 to about 44. But we certainly see different dynamics as people get older and are nearing or they're pre-retirement versus our younger members. Our younger members tend to be in our cash management group, which we weren't quite sure. We were like, do people need another group focused on budgeting and cash flow management? And people were like, yeah, I do. And one of the biggest insights out of that group was just, I need more of a coach. Like, I need a nudge. I need a reminder so I can stay on track. And that actually is another feature we're working on now.
And are the groups self-organizing, or do you sort of determine which groups based on the demand that you're seeing?
We started off with 7 groups that tie back to our wealth planning tool. So if you are a certified financial planner, there are 7 areas that are deemed sort of like the blueprint for having a strong financial plan. So we made a community for each of those 7 groups. And then we sort of looked in the universe of how people self-organize. And then we created the other groups like Women Who Wealth, Men Who Wealth, Team PA, New York, New Jersey. And then, of course, we have groups like I mentioned, First Gen Wealth, Newbie Investors. And then as we grow, if people tell us, hey, I'd like to see this sort of a group, then we can certainly add additional groups.
One thing we've talked about on this on the podcast has been sort of like the cultural and emotional, you know, nature of building wealth and you know, financial services, things like that. So I'd be curious, you know, you had these very specific groups, you know, you have your wealth planning tool, like what has come up for you and how these different groups, you know, culturally and emotionally relate to the concept of building wealth?
I think one of the biggest things that we've observed is people feeling that they're even allowed to be tied to the concept of wealth. And this was pretty interesting because when we were coming up with the name Wealth More, or even how we are very deliberate about calling this a wealth building community, deliberate about calling our folks wealth advisors versus financial planners, we were sort of made aware of this tension around identity and wealth, and that for the vast majority of folks, they've never self-identified with wealth. Yeah. Wealth has been something that is for the wealthy or people who were born into wealth. So even normalizing the idea of wealth for a newbie investor, for a first-generation wealth builder, for women, for minorities, for people of immigrant backgrounds has been sort of like probably the most like seismic change of people being like, oh, like our simple tagline, wealth is for us all, was like, dare we say that? Or people being like, oh yeah, I hadn't really thought of wealth being for something accessible to all of us.
And do you see, like, once you get people over that initial, like, conceptual hump of, like, wealth is, you know, something for me, something I deserve, something I'm worthy of, does their progress sort of speed along pretty quickly after they're over
Definitely.
That hump?
Definitely. Definitely. We see folks come in. They have one or two one-on-ones with their wealth advisor, and we see them begin to fund their accounts. So just even getting comfortable with what a wealth advisor is, having access to one, understanding the conversation that's normally reserved for, you know, super rich people, for someone to sit down with you and sort of show you this journey of how you become a millionaire and sort of what you need to save and invest over time. It's just never been available to most people. It's always been like, hey, if you have $500,000, you can open an account and then we'll bring you behind the curtain.
How do you mentioned cash management for your younger folks and then, you know, some other services. I feel like getting people to start saving, you know, is one thing, right? But getting them to keep it there and not draw from it, you know, that's a whole other thing. And to continue building, you know, continuously. How has that been? What have you seen there? What have you learned in terms of, like, actually stashing it away and building wealth over time?
I think that's where the community piece comes in, right? Like, one of the episodes we did was around sort of like consumerism and loud budgeting, right? There's this notion of I'm on an island of my own. I'm the only one struggling with, like, you know, my first job and making sure I have enough to put away, or I feel awkward if I turn down or say no to whatever outing or vacation my friends want to go on. And the community helps with that, right? I always tell people building wealth is better together. Bring a few of your friends. And when you say no to something, it won't feel awkward because you're on the same wealth building journey. But then the other thing we see with younger folks is the student loan thing. We have done young people a disservice when it comes to how to think about, like, student loans, home ownership, and building wealth. We've made it sort of like, just get rid of the student loans at the expense of doing everything else. And that's just the worst financial advice. Loans, paying back loans, should be sort of and, like, you're going to pay down the loans and you're going to find a way to build wealth along the way, because you're missing out on a decade plus of investing and building wealth. And most of the time, the student loans are pretty low interest rates. And the delta between what the market will do versus the rate on the loan would not suggest that you should take extra cash and put it towards the loans.
Okay. Curious about the more of the tech side of this and, like, you know, product features, you know, like, you talked a lot about community. We'd love to hear how you're leveraging tech to kind of, you know, speed along people's wealth growing journey there.
Yeah. And some of it is things like the wealth planning tool. The wealth planning tool is one of my favorite features in the app. It's a super simple visual that sort of tells you where you're doing really well and where you need to put a little more energy. But then it also drives you into a community recommendation. So it's not just a matter of, oh, I should do more on college planning and that's it. Well, we would also nudge you to join the college planning community so that you can take action. But then our challenges and activities are also tied to the area in which any member has identified as, like, I need to do a little more work here. So that's a big part. And then notifications of when content and activities for a community are happening sort of keep people in this engagement cycle. This is one of my favorite sort of things about the app. Coming from a big bank, most of their apps are transactional. People come in, they check a balance, they exit. You know, their average time in an app might be a few minutes. Our app, people come in and they're spending 8 to 10 minutes per session.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So that's a long time for an app.
They're consuming. I mean, when I see the numbers, I'm like, can we double check this?
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. There was one tool that we saw similar engagement, even back to my JPM days, and that was always the free credit score tool.
Mm.
One of the businesses that I ran was the first to offer a free credit score, and those communications, that particular feature, always, you would see 5-6 minutes of engagement, So for us, that wealth planning tool seems to be driving that similar engagement, but then also the content that's very specific to the communities that you're part of. So instead of like you open an app and there's sort of random feed of content that you've never said I'm even interested in, ours is like the complete reverse experience. You're coming in, you're seeing the most recent posts from the communities that you're part of and things that are relevant to your own little wealth planning tool and the areas you need help.
That's really interesting. And that tracks with experience too. Like I remember using one of my bank's wealth, you know, the credit monitoring, you know, tool and just sitting with it for, you know, at least 5 to 10 minutes. And like, it was educational. It was kind of, it was personalized because it was about me and like the things that I've done. So that seems like important to kind of cracking the code on getting people to, you know, engage with the tool more deeply. Yeah. Would love to talk a little bit about your growth journey. We're a, you know, content marketing agency. We do growth strategy and execution. So we'd be remiss not to ask about this.
Yeah. But,
you know, you closed a pre-seed round in April, I think, and, you know, launched in June. You've done a rebrand already. So 2024 was quite a busy year for you.
Yes.
Would love to hear about your growth plan from, you know, for 2025 and what's on the roadmap.
Yeah, we're certainly in growth mode. And every startup sort of goes through the build the product, launch the product, and then sort of, you know, that hunt for product market fit. And I feel like we're at that inflection point of, you know, you follow the breadcrumbs, you follow the user feedback, and ideally you're not overbuilding, but you're building in response to what users have put enough like value against. And that's where we are. Our mission was to exit 2024, having built the features and the sort of improvements to the user experience based on what we were told in the beta. And I couldn't be prouder of my team. I mean, we said we would launch Community Free in January. It's live. You guys can go to wealthmore.net. You can go to Apple or Android and download it. And that is just kind of like the real testament of this team. When we say we're going to do something, we come back with the receipts. And that, I think, has just been sort of beautiful to see the sort of harmony, the synergy, the alignment we get to and the speed in which we execute. And as we go into 2025, it is all about growth. And if there's one particular book that I just think for every founder you should read and you should implement this in your organization, but we live by radical focus. We have one metric that matters. It goes to marketing, it goes to engineering, it goes to the wealth planning. There's a communication every week about it. We track against our one metric. For us, it's a growth number, but it gets rid of the gray. Like, if you don't know what you're doing, then I'm not doing my job.
And just to clarify, that book is that Radical Focus by
yes.
Christina Wonky. Yeah, it is. Cool.
I love it.
Well,
and it's a quick read, folks. It's a quick read.
We'll include that in the episode notes as well. We love book recommendations. That's yes. I can't save us. So yeah, that's great. And is raising more on the roadmap, or what are you looking to kind of, you know, be sort of revenue positive? Like what is that side of it look like?
Yeah, we're focused. We've sort of come up with what I sort of coined a mini blitz approach to our growth. So we have a growth strategy that we are launching in the next month or so with some really clear metrics around customer acquisition, retention, upgrade from the community free to the paid plan that we want to prove out. And once we have that data, then we would feel pretty confident going back into the market to raise.
Got it.
And I'm sure you've seen, like, the market is not, I mean, frankly, from the minute I started this, it's been a horrible fundraising market.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's the past couple of years have been tough. That's why we ask, because, you know, it's a tough time for founders and for raising in general. So, be curious to like learn a bit more about just your journey and like you know your experience with the work culture and financial services. Obviously, infamous in many ways, for, you know, long hours and being you know, quite tough on people. How has that, if at all, affected the way in which you're leading and cultivating your team at Wealthmore?
Yeah. You know, I'm very cognizant of my own hard wiring. I prefer to have more on my plate than less on my plate, which serves me well in this seat. And I enjoyed the journey of like ideating and finding ways for us to like swing for the fences and play big. But I also understand that you cannot have an org constantly moving at 150 miles an hour. People will burn out. So I manage my own sort of speed and not transferring that speed to the team always. Like when we need to like operate and sprint, we sprint, but we try not to make the culture about constantly sprinting.
Yeah, I think that's been probably one of the biggest and hardest lessons I've had to learn as a founder is like my speed, which maybe necessarily needs to be a bit faster than the team's, should not be the team's speed or what I communicate.
Exactly.
That they, yeah. So that's really, really, really well said. It really hit the tone on that.
I mean, you become a founder because you like beast mode, right? Like beast mode doesn't bother you, right? Like you hear beast mode and you're like, let's go.
Yes. Whereas other people are like beast mode, that's, you know, and that's fair. Like it takes all types, right?
Yeah. And I have to tell you, Paul, I mean, that's something I had to learn about myself in corporate America was that the things that sort of jazzed me and got me fired up, like let's disrupt, let's build new things. For many people who felt that their role was like guardian of the galaxy was terrifying to them. Yeah. But you know, I grew up in consulting. I started my career as a management consultant. And so that hardwiring has always been there. But I had to realize that, oh, my God, this scares the crap out of people.
Yeah.
They're like, let me get out of McCall's meeting now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an important like sort of piece of self-knowledge and also like other awareness, you know, so I think that's really, really critical. And then also, like, how do you, you know, sort of toggle between those different modes? I've been reading some interesting stuff about, like, founder mode versus warrior mode versus, you know, caretaker mode. There's so many different modes you can take, you know, and at different times for the business across its life cycle as well.
Yeah. And realizing, like, what are the things that I really need to be in, like, beast mode about? Like, for me, it's customer experience, like, always, like. If we have a customer issue, if somebody has reported a bug, like for me, that's like all hands on deck. Like we have to make sure the customer is overjoyed about their experience. And then tech innovations that I feel will strongly like add to the customer experience and create real enterprise value. Those are the things like when we go through our tech roadmap, I'm like, guys, let's try to prioritize those things because those are the things that will add real enterprise value that will differentiate us and will, to a certain extent, give us first mover advantage.
Yeah, really well said. Want to move us into our quickfire questions. This is a chance for the audience. They're kind of fun, playful questions. One of our values at Literal Humans is to be professionally playful. And so, yeah, quick fire, you know, so your initial response that comes to your head, you know, short, snappy, if you can make it as such, obviously you can explain yourself.
Yeah.
But it's just a chance for our audience to get to know you a little bit better. So keeping in mind, you're already busy with one tech startup. If you could found another tech startup, what would it be and why?
It would be like getting kids into investing. It would be like Wealthmore, but a version for kids easily.
Gotcha. Yeah, I saw that. Don't they have like a kids money podcast on NPR or something like that as well?
I just love seeing when kids start investing, like they get it as early as like 5-6 years old. Like people get your kids investing.
Yeah, that's cool. What tech invention makes you most excited right now? Are there any AI applications that you're seeing, you know, potentially for Wealthmore, like on the roadmap?
Definitely. The coaching element that can come with it. Yeah. Making, and it's not necessarily advice, but just the nudge, the motivation, the sort of, you know, similar to like a fitness coach.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking a fitness wearable. It's like, hey, you know, get on an exercise bike or hey, get on your wealth platform and invest a little bit. Yeah.
You got it.
There. Conversely, what tech invention makes you most concerned right now?
AI, both.
That tends to be the answer these days. Who is a literal human who's been integral to your career journey that you want to shout out?
Gosh, there've been so many. You know, there've been it's hard to point out just one, but I think having been so fortunate to be at American Express under Ken Chenault's leadership and being at JP Morgan under Jamie Dimon's leadership have been sort of the best for my career.
Okay.
Yeah. Watching those two like dynamos operate. It's amazing. Yeah. Masterclass.
And on the topic of inspiration, what's like an inspirational quote or saying that's kind of stuck with you through your journey in financial tech?
John Lewis. Yeah, easily. If not now, if not you, then whom? If not now, then when?
Yeah. John, yeah. He's obviously, lion of a man. Disney talked about like good trouble. Like how do you get into good trouble that kind of disruptive, but ultimately moves things forward.
Yeah. And it's his quote resonates so much because when you are sort of going up against like the financial behemoth, sometimes it's like, oh, you're just being a troublemaker. You just want to disrupt, right? And I'm like, no, I'm a good troublemaker.
Yeah.
I want more people. I don't want people spending 40 years working and feeling financial anxiety their entire lifespan and then retiring with financial anxiety. So I'm like, I call my team, we're the Avengers.
Yeah. Financial tech Avengers. Yeah. That's great. And you must be received just by way of follow. You must be received it. Like, have you found a lot of allies in the financial services, financial tech sector because of what you're trying to do? Yeah. Has there been any friction? What's that look like?
I think there's allyship and friction. And I say this from the sense of when you go into the world of impact investing, for example, there's a hyper-focus on low, unbanked, unbankable, getting people out of poverty. And that work is noble and we need that work. But what we find is that once you get people out, when they don't have the financial literacy, when they don't understand they need insurance, they need to invest, we see that wealth disappear within one generation. And so it has been hard to get folks to realize that the idea of wealth is impact. And you are literally going two steps forward, one step backwards if you are not putting in the systems guardrails to move people along the continuum and keep them moving forward. So that, I think, has been sort of this tension of like, but we have people that are poor. I'm like, I 100% understand that. But as you move people out and that first generation that goes to college and starts to build wealth, the data shows that people backslide within just one generation, particularly people of color and women. So if you want to sustain that progress, you need firms like Wealthmore that are teaching them to invest and getting them investing early. Like, we're talking to people 20 to 25 years earlier than a typical firm does because we've made the barrier to entry so low.
Yeah. And what you're, in doing so, what you're potentially delivering is like a better, better life to them, later, those 25 years later, or even further than that, when they're finally ready to retire or enjoy that wealth.
Absolutely.
They've got ahead of the game, as it were.
I mean, Paul, we took away pensions, right, that were managed by like professional money managers. We replaced it with the DI, the model that most people aren't professionally trained to take on, right? I think it's the one place that we've asked the person to be both the patient and the doctor. It's not
that's
working.
That's really well said. Yeah.
And it's not
that's
working.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. We love the work that you're doing at Wealthmore and big fans of your mission, and we're excited to see it grow, your communities grow, the products, new offerings, new features are rolling out. And just we're excited for your year in 2025. So I want to thank you for taking some time to jump on the pod today.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for doing tech for good. Thank you for getting the word out. We want more people doing well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Where can our listeners find out more about Wealthmore?
Yeah, you can always join our All the Wealth podcast. We have that on YouTube and Spotify. And of course, you can download the app on Apple or Android and join the communities. It takes literally less than 2 minutes to download the app and get in the community. We timed it.
Nice. We'll drop some links in our episode description. I want to thank you again. This has been another episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. We've been joined today by McCall Drontlees White, the founder and CEO of Wealthmore, doing some great work in financial tech and wealth advice and community support to close the wealth gap and create generational wealth. Thank you so much for your time, McCall.
Thank you for having me.
And as always, everyone, please leave a review, give us a rating. It helps us get great guests like McCall onto the pod. Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.